And joining me right now here on the Mark Moses Show to go over the latest on March Madness with games starting up again tonight for the Sweet 16. He's got his great job as the head coach at Florida Tech. He's my good friend Billy Mims. Coach, how you doing today?
Mark, I'm fantastic. It's March. It's March Madness. I've been on the road recruiting. I've been watching all the NCAA tournament games and the NIT as well. I mean, come on. This is like hoop heaven for a basketball coach right now, and I live in Florida. So, come on, life has got to be good when it's March. There's no snow on the ground. It's sunny and warm. It's basketball season at its best in Florida.
Here is the twist for this year's tournament, though, through the first two rounds. We don't really have Cinderellas. We have big boy. We have big boy programs. What's your thoughts, Coach?
It's the year of the Blue Bloods, I think. Isn't that what we call them, Blue Bloods?
Yeah.
You know, it's the year of the Blue Bloods. And as you said, I mean, there were some upsets early on, you know, when you look at a few of the games. Come on, obviously, Yale knocking off Auburn, that goes down in history as one of the biggest upsets. You had a 13-seed Yale from the Ivy League knocking off a 4-seed Auburn from the SEC. That's a pretty big upset. I'm sorry, unless you actually were a graduate of Yale, you probably did not pick them in your bracket.
No.
So there was definitely some early upsets, but now by the time you get to the Sweet 16 and the group of teams we're looking at right now, you got big boys, as you said, big boy basketball, college basketball, Blue Bloods. And you know, when you look, we talk about the Blue Bloods, there was another big upset, one of the bluest bloods of them all, okay? How about another 3-14 upset? And I know I picked the 4-13 to speak about first, but the 3-14 has got to be the biggest upset in the tournament, and that was the Kentucky-Oakland game. And so for Kentucky to be knocked out in the first round by an Oakland University 14th seed, that was pretty, and Oakland had lost 11 games this year. It's not like they were, you know, a 30-3 mid-major. No, they had lost 11 games, but they went out there, and again, you had a guy named Golke, who was a Division II player for 4 years, Mark, just like our Florida Tech program.
Yeah.
Just like the quality basketball we have here in Melbourne on offer all the time at the Division II level. This guy was a Division II star for 4 years. He joins Oakland for 1 year, and does he have a dream come true? You talking Cinderella? He was wearing a glass slipper in the NCAA tournament. He knocked down 10 threes, 32 points in the game, 10 made threes, 2-for-3 at the free throw line on a foul three. He missed one of those, but 32 points to knock off the bluest blood of any college basketball program, the Kentucky Wildcats, and Coach John Calipari. Golke came one made three away from tying the all-time record for made threes in a single game in the NCAA tournament, which is 11. He made 10. And in his first two games, okay, he hit 6 threes. In the next game, he had 16 threes in his first two games in the Division I NCAA tournament. So there again, early upsets, yes, some big ones. But now in the Sweet 16, it's Blue Blood basketball at its best.
Okay, here's the question for Billy Mims then. Is the era of the one and done, is that over and now it's you know, the transfer portal, so now there's all these veterans on all these teams? Like, what is this current state of basketball?
Well, you're right. I mean, the one-and-dones are still always going to be there, but it's a great point that you make. I think the one-and-dones have hurt two of the big Blue Bloods. Now, one is still alive, so don't get me wrong, but I also think they've sort of changed their philosophy. They're not winning with one-and-dones right now. But down the stretch for Coach K at Duke, he shifted to the one-and-done, you know, recruiting the Paolo Bancheros of the world, right? And he was doing it because he was like, well, look at Kentucky. They're doing it. And, you know, it gave huge exposure to Kentucky that were bringing in kids going, wow, I'm going to UK because I'll play 1 year and I'll be in the NBA. But how many NCAA championships has Calipari won since he started really going down the one-and-done road? How many did Coach K win playing the one-and-dones and the swan song of his coaching career? I don't think you can win the NCAA tournament. Now, this goes all the way back to the famous Fab Five, right? Michigan. Now, that's the last time that somebody really had a lot of freshmen that competed on the big stage of the NCAA tournament as well as that. But consistently, year in and year out, it's hard to win the NCAA tournament playing multiple freshmen that you're only going to have for 1 year. And I think that's what we're seeing change, Mark, is that the Blue Bloods are saying, you know what, we tried that, but you know what, it takes veterans to win this tournament. This is the greatest tournament, the greatest sporting tournament on the planet. I think there's two great events. The World Cup in soccer is a pretty doggone impressive soccer event,
yeah.
Right? The best of the world in soccer, and it lasts a month. It's very similar to March Madness in that sense. The difference is the World Cup is not single elimination. In the first stages, the group stages, you can lose a game and survive and still win the World Cup in advance. But this is an event where it's a month-long basketball event, March Madness, and probably rakes in about as much money as the World Cup.
Yeah.
The TV deals galore. But March Madness is a one-off single elimination. You can have one bad game. You can have five bad seconds, and your chances of winning the national championship are gone. You need veteran players now, proven players that know your system and want to win because they love that school. They love the name on the front of the shirt, Mark, more than the name on the back of the shirt.
Do you feel, head basketball coach Billy Mims, we don't have a lot of Cinderellas, and I know you and me, we always root for the underdog. We do. But from like a TV rating standpoint, do you think it'll be great for television ratings with all these big boys still alive this late in the tournament?
Well, I kind of think in recent years, people understand that it's very difficult to have a Cinderella get to the Final Four.
Mm.
You know, FAU did it, and people are saying, well, who's all of a sudden FAU was on the map. Who are Florida Atlantic University? Owls? Never heard of them,
yeah.
Right? So people watched out of curiosity, maybe not so much even, hey, let's root for Cinderella. It was a curiosity effect there, too, because never heard of these guys. But it's so rare that it happens. I think that's why the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament, the very first Thursday through Sunday that we had last weekend, the 64-team field, when the 64 goes to 32, that opening weekend, that's when people are tuned in and that's when the brackets go crazy. That's when you have to be able to pick some upsets to win your bracket because you know that somewhere a 12 is going to beat a 5, a 13 is going to beat a 4, maybe a 15 might get a 2, and, hey, we've even seen a 16 beat a 1 in recent years. So I think people understand that the Cinderellas are there when the party begins. But it's very rare for Cinderella to keep dancing too deep into this party, too deep. You know, in the original Disney, the clock struck 12 and Cinderella was running out of that ball. In college basketball, the clock strikes a lot sooner than 12 midnight for Cinderella. Cinderella doesn't dance very long in the NCAA tournament, no matter who she is. So at this stage of the tournament, I think people are excited to see some different Blue Bloods, some different teams. You know, you still got San Diego State alive. And in recent years, you know, they've really jumped up in the basketball world. So that's a kind of newish team that's still out there. And you've got your boys. I know you've got some heart and soul pulling for Creighton.
Yeah.
And Coach McDermott has gotten Creighton into the Sweet 16. So there's an interesting one there with Creighton. And then I think you've got one of the most interesting games to me is a game between Marquette and North Carolina State. And, I mean, you know, how often do you see Marquette in the Sweet 16? I remember the days when Marquette was in the Final Four, with a famous coach named Al McGuire on the sideline, and they had a tremendous basketball team back then, and people looked at this small little school, you know, from Wisconsin, you know, and saying, who is this team? Marquette. And all of a sudden they became, back in the day, you know, before it was even a 64-team field, it wasn't a tournament that big back then, and Marquette got in and got to the Final Four and proved that Al McGuire was a great coach and that you didn't have to have a student body of 60,000 to win the basketball championship. So Marquette and North Carolina State have tremendous history. You've got the Al McGuire era at Marquette, and you've got the Jim Valvano era at North Carolina State. So two of the most historic programs for big-time championships in the past are Marquette and North Carolina State. I think that makes an interesting game. And how about this, Mark? Look at this. North Carolina State is dancing to the Sweet 16, and the Wolfpack, if it weren't for the amazing run they had in the ACC tournament, they wouldn't even be in the NCAA tournament. They won five straight games over five straight days, beating North Carolina in the championship game, who ended up being a number one seed in one of the regionals here. That's almost unheard of for a team to go into their conference tournament, one of the lowest seeds in the conference, and the only way they can get to the NCAA tournament is to win their conference tournament and get the automatic qualification, the AQ bid of the conference championship tournament, victor getting an automatic bid into the NCAA tournament. That was their only way to get here, and they played five games in 5 days. Talk about tired. Who was tired? They won. They got it done, and they're still dancing, Mark. It reminds me of the year that Jim Valvano in 1983.
You know what's funny? When I saw NC State win that ACC tournament, I went straight to the 30 for 30 and rewatched it with Jimmy V. It's
wild. Well, here's the thing. Think about this, and this is a fact that most people won't know, right? Now, you watched the 30 for 30, you rewatched it, so you know.
Yeah.
I was a friend of Jim Valvano's. I worked his summer basketball camps.
That's cool.
He recruited one of the kids that played for my junior college. At the time, I was at Chowan College, a junior college in North Carolina, and they were recruiting a player, one of our wings named Gary Madison. So I got to see Jim Valvano up close and personal a lot. I went to some of their games. I stood in the locker room downstairs in the old Reynolds Coliseum to watch the pregame. I knew all the assistant coaches. I'm still very good friends with Clay Moser, who was one of the top assistant coaches for Jim Valvano on that Wolfpack team way back then, and Stan Luter, another one of the assistant coaches from that team, good friends of mine. But here's the interesting thing. In 1983, as you just pointed out, I was close. My mind was close. I had 82, 83 somewhere there. But in 1983, when they won that in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in the pit, think about this. Albuquerque, New Mexico was where it was then, the Final Four. This year it's in Phoenix, Arizona. Kind of a similar location, right, for a Cinderella story. If there is a Cinderella, it's a blue blood named North Carolina State, because in 1983, every single game that North Carolina State played in the postseason that year, they were the lower-seeded team.
It's insane.
They were never the highest seed. How about that? Through the ACC tournament, Valvano said, we're going to win this tournament because, again, they couldn't get to the NCAA unless they were the ACC tournament champions. They were the lowest-seeded team in every game in the ACC tournament. Then, when they got into the NCAA tournament, they were the lower-seeded team in every game in the NCAA tournament, all the way up to playing Phi Slamma Jamma, the University of Houston, Guy Lewis chewing on his towel, right, in the national championship game in the pit in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the Wolfpack became Cinderella darlings that year. No one ever believed they'd even get to the Final Four, get to the championship, let alone win it. But Jim Valvano had a philosophy called survive and advance. And that's what he told his team every night. We survive tonight. We advance to dance a little more tomorrow.
They literally, on that run, Coach Billy Mims, in the ACC tournament, they had to stop North Carolina with Michael Jordan with that team. Then they had to beat Ralph Sampson in Virginia. There was like multiple games they had to win. They go to the actual tournament. They have to beat Ralph Sampson in Virginia again. Beat him twice. And like you said, and beat Houston with Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler. It's the greatest Cinderella run in all of sports. I'm sorry. You can't.
And you gotta love the post-game celebration. Remember that?
The hug.
The post-game celebration. You had Jim Valvano running around the court as people were storming the court there in Albuquerque. Valvano's running around the court like a madman, right? And I don't know if you ever heard him tell the story, but it is a classic, right? People were like, everywhere he went after winning that championship, people were like, Coach, we were watching the championship game, and you just started running around the court through people and all around, looking up into the crowd and looking all around. You were running around like a madman. You know, he wasn't going over to shake someone's hand. He wasn't hugging his players. He was running around like a madman. And they're like, what was going on at that moment, Coach? And you know what he said? I'll never forget, because V was a classic. He could tell a story, right? I heard him speaking at a big reception in North Carolina after the final. I was there. And V said the answer to that question was, well, you know, I remember that great sports TV show that said about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And he said, this was one of those moments where I thought this, whatever I did at this moment, the Cinderella run, competing throughout, completing it as national champions when nobody believed we could, I thought this was a moment that would be captured and used forever. So my picture would be sort of that thrill of victory on the wide world of sports forever, right? He said, so you know what? I'm thinking if that's going to be the case, I got to find a pretty girl to kiss. He said, so I'm running around like a madman, right? Well, I'm looking for my wife, Pam. And so that's what he said, you know, I'm looking for Pam. I look up into the crowd, and she's not where she was supposed to be. So I panic. I said, but the cameras are following me. I got to do something here that's going to look great. He said, so I started looking for Wolfpack cheerleaders. I'm thinking, you know, I got to kiss somebody pretty.
Stop it.
Because it's going to be iconic moment forever. So that was what was hilarious. He said, I'm looking for my wife. I can't find her. She's not there. I start looking for cheerleaders.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, only V could tell that story and get away with it like that.
You're not kidding.
But he was going crazy thinking that his image at that moment would be iconic on the wide world of sports forever.
You know what's funny? We're here with Billy Mims, head basketball coach at Florida Tech. We're talking March Madness. So the Magic yesterday, the storyline is, oh no, the Orlando Magic have to play three basketball games in 4 days all at home. And you're like, you should feel sorry for them. These are the top athletes in the world playing this sport. But you just said it. NC State played 5 games in 5 days. As a basketball coach, how hard is that to just continuously play at that high level that many days in a row?
Sometimes I think it's actually an advantage, Mark. And my wife, Lynn, she said that before, too. Sometimes the teams that get a bye, you know, and are sitting out waiting to play an opponent. So look at the ACC tournament. You know, North Carolina didn't have to play as many games as North Carolina State had to play, because NC State basically was in like a play-in game for the teams at the bottom of the league to start the week, right? And they had to win 5 games in 5 days, while the Tar Heels had an early bye, and they're waiting to see who they're going to play. So they don't have to play as many games. sometimes you get an early team that that plays early, then has a day off before they have to play again, whereas you've got the team like North Carolina State that never gets a day off and has to turn up and win back to back to back to back to back, 5 days, five games, and they got to win them all or their season's over. So I think it's an emotional moment where you say that that is something that's motivating. It's inspirational because every single day they're going in saying, if we don't win today, we don't get to practice next week. You don't get to put these uniforms on anymore.
Yeah.
You don't get to lace up those shoes anymore. So I think it can be an advantage sometimes, not so much a disadvantage. And secondly, Mark, people listening out there know, probably have heard at some point, seen or whatever, all these young kids, the superstars that go to the ACC or the SEC or the Big Ten or whatever, right? Before they went to North Carolina State and the ACC, they were a high school kid playing on their AAU team in the summertime. If you go to an AAU tournament, you'll see those kids sometimes playing two games in one day. And they play four games in 3 days or five games in 3 days. Those AAU tournaments, the games go over and over and over. And so you're watching these young kids play multiple games in one day and six or seven games in a four-day weekend, and nobody's complaining then. But all of a sudden when you put them on a collegiate basketball team or a pro basketball team, oh, no, they can't do that now. One game a day is all they can play. And, oh, you know, we can't have back-to-back games. You better have a rest in between. So I'm kind of like, I think Charles Barkley said it best one day. I think when they were talking about load management in the NBA, and Barkley was like, are you kidding me? These guys are getting paid millions of dollars to step out there on the court for 48 minutes and play a basketball game. And you're telling me the load management that they can't play 83 games over 8 months or 9 months?
I say this all the time. They don't work at Staples or Lowe's from 9 to 5, then hit the arena to go play basketball. This is all they do all day.
It's a joke when you hear people complain, oh, my God, they got to play back-to-back nights. How about baseball? Look at baseball.
Every
they play
day.
Doubleheaders.
Every day.
And they play every day. What is it? You know, 100, how many is it? 164 games? What's the schedule now?
162. You're close.
162 game schedule, right? And they're playing almost every single day. When do they even get time to go over a scouting report and prepare for the game they're getting ready to play?
During the game. During the current game.
Turn up and play.
Let's end with this. Let's end with this with head basketball coach Billy Mims. And I always appreciate coming on. I love the armchair quarterbacks who are just like, why didn't you pass the ball? Why didn't you do this? And I'm like, you don't understand. This is the highest pressure being in these basketball games. You are 19 years old. Millions of people are watching. You know, you have a split second to make a decision. How hard is it to play this big time basketball like this?
Oh, I mean, at the end of the day, and the kids love it.
Yes.
They're doing what they love, Mark. They're doing it on the biggest stage in the world, March Madness, the NCAA tournament. There's like, 12 networks covering it now, right? I'm joking, you know, but
yeah,
it's over and over and over. These kids are on CBS. They're on TBS. They're on TNT. They're on True TV. God knows where they're popping up next. And social media has now got them 24/7. You click into March Madness, boom, you're seeing those kids, right? And the point is, they love it. These kids, that's what they grew up begging, hoping one day, I want to play college basketball. I want to be in March Madness. I want to be on the big stage. So, you know, it's funny, when you go to the Final Four and you're sitting in that stadium and there's 75 to 100,000 people in a football stadium with a tiny little basketball court sitting out there in the middle. And you think, if you're a kid walking out there as a freshman in college to play in the Final Four, the culmination of March Madness, in a gigantic stadium, right? and you're at that little basketball court sitting out there in the middle of that stadium, and you look up around you, and you say, oh, my God, every single one of these seats is going to have a fan in it tomorrow night when we're playing in the Final Four trying to win a national championship, and there's going to be 500 TV cameras pointed at this court, and I'm going to be out there.
It's insane. It is.
I mean, all of a sudden, that is, in some cases, that's a bigger moment than that same kid playing an NBA game. Because NBA arenas only have 24, 25,000 people in them, right? You don't ever have an NBA game with a crowd of 75,000 watching it. So, in some cases, this is the largest stage for a single game that any kid's ever going to be on. And I'm telling you, Mark, they tune out those 75,000 people and that they focus on that little rim. And like, I'll steal something from Gene Hackman and my favorite all-time basketball movie, Hoosiers. When you walk out there onto that court in March Madness in that big arena, you just take that tape measure out there with you and you measure that free throw line. It's 15 feet from the baseline. And you measure the height of that rim, and it's 10 feet from the floor to that rim. And it's 50 feet across the court, and it's 94 feet from end to end. And you'll find, just like my buddy at Hoosier said, Gene Hackman, with one of the greatest lines ever, I think whatever you do, whatever measurement you take, you'll find it's the same as our little gym back home. A great statement to make as a coach when you walk into that arena, into that environment, and say, you know what? I don't think this is going to be any different because the game is going to be played between those lines on those goals. That court is 94 by 50. Those goals are 10 feet high, just like it is back home. You grew up playing on courts like this in high school. You're playing on courts like this in college right now. And this big stage is a big stage, but the game is the same. The court is the same. Let's focus on the court, these baskets, and this game, and let's get it done.
Great stuff. Head basketball coach Billy Mims, my man, thank you so much for coming on, and enjoy the games over the next couple of days.
You too, my friend. Enjoy the basketball, and I'm going to say go Wolfpack because I want Jim Valvano smiling down from heaven saying, there's my boys, Cinderella, once again.